We'd like to do another song for you. Of course, we always like to talk about our state of Tennessee. So we'd like to do this one and dedicate it to all the nice folks who like waltzes, called the Tennessee Waltz.
I was waltzing with my darling to the Tennessee Waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved one, and while they were waltzing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. I remember that night and the Tennessee Waltz. Only you know how much I have lost. Yes, I lost my little darling the night they were playing that beautiful Tennessee Waltz.
Thomas Paine Podcast, guys, putting this out to the subscribers on Patreon and .com/TruePundit and Subscribestar.com/TruePundit. Pretty damn solid, and I think I'm being conservative and maybe a little bit modest. Interview. A link to the Nashville Christmas Day bombing. Figure we play some Tennessee Waltz and Patsy Cline. And emphasis on the word Patsy. It's sometimes the music fits things perfectly, so. Let's give you some background about the... We'll put this out later to the public, but I'm so backed up, and I want to get this out to you folks because you guys are good to us, and we want to be good to you. Let me stop this. Patsy Cline back in the day, and since we're talking about Tennessee waltzing, and we'll play some Mamie Lou Harris, some Sam Cooke, and some Elvis Presley of the same song title, if we make it that far. I got those three queued up so I can just talk. Really good, strong interview. A guy by the name of Joe Dapro. Some background on him. He's from East Tennessee. He's lived in Nashville for many years. He owns a big construction company. And as you will hear, how far back his family goes to construction in the Nashville area. Way back. Way, way, way back. He's a commercial contractor, and he's working on some of the properties damaged by the bomb now, or bombs, as they may start to think it's more than one bomb after listening to what he had to say, what he has to describe down there. The feds made all the contractors down there sign paperwork and get special passes to work down there. You'll hear about that. He's a little bit, he's right up my alley, though. He ended up snooping around the area of the bomb down, and he almost got himself in trouble. He'll tell you about that. And his analysis is there's no way that the RV bomb, short of being filled with C4 or fertilizer a la Timothy McVeigh style, did that much damage, he's seen. And we're in the process of getting some photos that we'll share with you folks, too. And apparently it's pretty... Of course, the feds don't want any photos to get out. That's often their MO when it comes to this stuff. Let people know exactly how bad it is down there so that they can craft their little stories. We saw that play out in Las Vegas. Talks about that as well. This guy's a really rich family history that dates back to the founding of the United States. Especially the South. His father was no... I mean, his father was deep in intel. He was a 4 master degree engineer with NASA and worked many military contracts. You hear about that, Lockheed Martin, Skunk Works, etc. Family goes back to the 1800s in the Nashville construction industry. This guy's just true blue American as they come. And the interview is out of the park as far as I'm concerned. And I don't need to put words in his mouth. Believe me. So we were fortunate to track this guy down. And these guys are not easy to find, by the way. That we have a good crack squad here. And as you know, we tend to get to the bottom of things and uncover information that leads to more questions, etc. So that's where we're at. And I'm happy to play the interview with him for you. And we'll cut it loose sometime. As our schedules clear up here this week, there's a lot of things going on here, a lot of things to keep track of, as you know, but this is something for you folks to chew on. That's when it comes to national security and the FBI, we like to keep those little assholes on their toes. And this is yet another opportunity to hold their feet to the fire and question the official narratives, which I think you should always do when it comes to the government. And what Joe has to say is, in many respects, it's a little bit frightening. To be honest with you, it just shows you that it's just a massive contrast, a massive gap, a gap the size of the Grand Canyon between reality and the official narrative. That some guy in an RV blew up the city. Blew up a couple buildings. It's far more than a couple buildings. And, well, I'll let him tell the story. We're happy to bring it to you, and we appreciate you guys on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. Giving support to us. And that's why you get this stuff first. And you'll be getting more things first. And maybe only. We might put this whole damn thing behind a paywall before it's over with this year. Depending on how ads work out. Always tinkering around. Always trying to figure out best ways to help this thing grow one way or the other. I'd like it to grow on both formats. But whatever happens, happens. So you folks have been loyal to us. And so you deserve some intel first. And we'll be adding another tier or two by the end of the week, too. It's just been... you know how it is. There's not enough hours in the day sometime. Everything else going on with your family members. And I haven't been feeling all that great lately, so I've been trying to take care of that with the doctors and things like that. But it's nothing to worry about. It's just one of those things. I'm just an old man. You're getting to become an old man. And so we're battling that as well. We're weathering that as well. But we appreciate you folks out there. What's going on here? The music stopped playing? Just when I get to Elvis Presley, it stops playing. What the hell happened? Look, Elvis recorded that in a shower. Graceland. What's going on? Thanks, guys, for everything. We'll keep plugging away, and we'll keep pushing the pedal to the metal. Just need to get some more sleep on a regular basis, and everything will work out. So, but a lot of us here have been pushing for 4 years now, 4.5 years, and I guess it would have been easier if on all of us if President Trump had been reelected, and we might have to press even harder now, try to save this, what's left of this country. So. Still a lot of good people out there like Joe. Let's listen to what he has to say. And we'll see you guys in a little bit for Pain in the Morning. Take care and God bless.
Yeah, hey, Mark, how you doing?
How's it going, man? How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
What's happening about down there? You all right?
Yeah, I'm about to pack up my truck here shortly. Just going to head up to D.C.,
Oh, yeah, you're going up to D.C. That's what he said. He said you could give me some insights on what's going on down in Nashville.
Oh, well, I can give you my insight from what I've seen firsthand. Some pictures. I got that the other day. Got some pretty good pictures before the FBI ran me off. They actually stopped me and made me delete my pictures. But we know how iPhones are. You just go to your recently deleted and add them back in. So I've still got the pictures, but
listen, no, they didn't make you go into your deleted folder and delete those.
No.
Well, that's no. The FBI for you. You know, you got
right. These two look like maybe they put an ad in the paper for FBI agents, and these two popped up. I mean, one of the little short round woman, and the other one dude looked like he was about 5 years past retirement. But you know, I've got a job going. This happened at the corner of Commerce and Church, Commerce and Second, and so you got Commerce Street that crosses, you know, 5th, 4th, 3rd, 2nd, and it basically stops at 2nd. And then you've got Church Street that crosses those same streets and continues on the 1st. So it's one block from Commerce to Church. That's the AT&T building. And from what I gathered, I mean, you know, I've seen people posting a video of what looked like a little contrail at the last minute by a missile, a blue flash. But you know, I'm no munitions expert, nor do I claim to be, but the damage that I saw down there, and just the damage it did to our building, one block up and one block back, I mean, it blew all the windows out of the back of our building. And we're at 3rd and Church. It's a job, an ongoing project that, you know, I've been working on for about 3 months, converting an old law firm office building was built in 1877. We've been converting it to Airbnbs, these big, massive Airbnbs that sleep like 15 to 20 people in a party.
Right.
They got game rooms in them, and very elaborate, very, you know, high-end stuff, as you would think, you know, downtown with the property prices being down there what they are. But the 3rd floor is what I'm working on now. We're putting in our pine ceilings and crown mold and, you know, stuff like that, tiling the showers and everything. But So it blew all the windows out of our building, which is only 8 windows, but it blew all them out and blew them inward a good ways too. And we also suffered some structural damage in our elevator shaft and structural damage around the windows. It blew them in so hard it, you know, blew the sills in and some of the brick and stuff like that too. We found brick on top of our building, and like I said, we're a block up and a block back, you know, block left and a block north and a block west of where the actual detonation took place. And what amazed me the most, I think, was not what it did to our building. I mean, that still is amazing, but if you go to the corner of Church and 4th, which is yet another block over and still a block up, and you look up at the Regions Bank building, you might be able to see this on a Google Earth Live if you've got it,
right.
But it blew about. And it's a solid glass building, you know, it has the glass panels, and it blew about 50 of them off each side of that building. I don't know how the blast wave could have went over the top of that AT&T structure and then went even another block beyond between 3rd and 4th. This is on the corner of 4th and Church, and all those windows on both sides of that building are gone. And if you went and bought ammonium nitrate, which if I understand this right, I did a little research on it. When Timothy McVeigh bombed the Oklahoma building, he had close to 8,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate,
right,
which he had a big cube truck, and he was stuffed to the max with it. And RV, we've got RVs. I've had them all my life. You've got, unless it was gutted out completely and that thing was packed completely like McVeigh did, even that would be hard to believe that it would do that much damage. But another thing too, the Agricultural Commission made it to where you couldn't buy over 100 pounds at a time, and you had to have a permit if you wanted over 100 pounds at a time, but you also had to have the farm exempt card that showed that you own agricultural property, much like you do to buy red diesel for farm equipment. So I don't know how anybody could have constructed a homemade bomb out of things readily available to the average person that would wreak that kind of damage down there. What gets me is I walked down through the debris field the other day. They had the streets about cleaned up, but the sidewalks are still, you know, spotty at best. They got most of the big stuff off. But as I walked down through there and years ago, I put all the windows in the Hooters at Second Church, and we did a lot of remodeling on Second Church. We did work on Wild Horse Saloon, Hard Rock Cafe. I used to do a lot of commercial restaurant build out stuff.
Right.
But as I walked down through there, on the west side going south, that's where the AT&T building was. So I was walking down the east side of Second Avenue going south, and I kept noticing building after building all the way down to Rodizio's, and that's when the FBI stopped me. All the glass was blown outward. So were the windows and the window frames and the neon lights and, you know, the billboard signage and everything like that that people put in the windows. It was all laying out on the street. I couldn't figure out why it wasn't laying inside on the floor. It just didn't make sense that a blast emanating from an RV parked on the street would blow stuff outward instead of, you know, blow it inward. So that was, you know, one of the clues. I thought, well, maybe if it was a missile, it came in with such force that the vacuum sucked the windows out. I mean, if you're talking about something, you know, coming in at 3,600 miles an hour, it's going to create a vacuum as it comes down that, you know, could have done that. Or it could have been the blast from across the street when it hit the AT&T building. And to me, that's what it looked like it did. It looked like it was almost something that was aimed at an air. They've got a, it's about a 6 or 8 foot, maybe about 6 or 8 foot, ventilation fan with fins on it that open. And I've seen it, you know, a dozen times. We walk down there, you know, go to Sbarro's and other places like that to eat. Walk by it all the time, obviously, before this, but it almost looks like the blast centered right in that ventilation shaft. But the thing was, there was no crater. There wasn't a crater like you would see that type of explosion. There would be a crater under the vehicle. And one of the guys that works for Case Restoration, they were down there doing some board ups, and he said that they were down at a corner of Broadway and Second, which is well over a quarter mile away, and they found part of a metal, and he said it almost looked like a beer keg housing or something that had exploded, and it was all splintered. And they were up there, you know, checking for roof damage for the owners and the insurance company. They had to have an FBI escort. And they brought it to the FBI's attention, and the FBI made them leave. And they called up forensic people, and I don't know what happened with that piece of metal or what it was from. But he said it didn't look like anything that came out of an RV. Maybe the guy did take a beer keg and made a very powerful bomb out of it using, you know, possibly ammonium nitrate, possibly glycol alcohol. You can make a bomb out of that. You can make a bomb out of gunpowder if you've got enough of it.
Right. True. That's true.
When you compress something, especially, you're gonna increase its power simply by compressing it. So, I mean, my take on it is I don't see how something did that much damage, and the fact that the shockwave of it came up Second Avenue, went between down Church Street, and then still was powerful enough to come up the alley behind our building, which is blocked by a big parking garage on that backs up to Second. It backs up to the parking garage. We look out our windows, we're seeing the rooftop of the parking garage. And how the blast came, maybe even through the parking garage or whatever. Not just blew our windows out, but blew about every window out on the buildings up and down from us. So, and then when I saw that on the side of both sides of the Regions Bank, at least 50 windows all in a row, all consecutively, you know, it was like the whole side of the buildings were gone on, you know, for 10 floors up and about, you know, 5 windows wide. And those windows are probably 6 to 8 foot each. All the glass was gone off that, you know, Regions Bank building on 4th and Church. So I just don't see how any type of homemade bomb, being especially the fact that it had to blow through the walls of a motorhome, which aren't really that thick, you know, it's 2x2 and aluminum, but that would right. still contain the blast to some degree. The roof structure, the, you know, the P-30 chassis that thing was sitting on, that would have all, you know, at least somewhat, you know, muffled it. And then the recording, the... thing about the recording, here's what I don't understand, is they said you could hear it all the way down to Broadway and Second. Well, like I said, that's well over a quarter mile. And unless there was, a megaphone on the front and the back of that RV, I just don't see that could have been heard from that far away unless it was really, really loud. But of course, 6:30 in the morning, nobody's on the street, really. There's not much, noise pollution to speak of. So maybe it could have been. But Nashville has these things all through downtown called smart poles. And they're
smart,
owned actually.
You said smart holes?
Smart poles.
Oh, poles. I got you.
They look like a power pole, but they're black and they're metal. And on top, they got a megaphone and a siren for public announcements or, for an emergency situation where you're trying to instruct people where to go or what to do. And I think they put them up after the first tornado came through Nashville in 98. But somebody told me that they are programmed through a server that runs through AT&T, that you have to have access to that server to be able to put anything on it. And I've had several people, including the country music artist Buck McCoy, told me that he heard it coming from the smart pole right outside his window, because his apartment was right above Rodizio's Steakhouse, and it blew his windows outward. It did enough structural damage at his place to where his sprinklers went off and it ruined all of his guitars and stuff. He was on OAN a few nights ago talking about it. But I know him, and I saw him down there the other day crossing the street and hollered at him and said, "Hey, man, what the hell happened?" But so I don't know. There's just a lot that don't add up. I mean, I'm no FBI tech. I'm no forensic expert or anything, but just, things like that don't add up. And to be able to hear that on Broadway, there's one smart pole at the corner of Broadway and Second. There's one at the corner of pretty much every intersection through downtown till you get up to 8th Avenue. I don't think they go past 8th. But from 8th Avenue to 1st Avenue on both sides of Broadway, you can drive down through downtown and see them. They've been there for years. And like I said, someone told me that they are operated by Metro, but they're run through AT&T servers. So if you want to put a message on one, you would have to have access to the AT&T server. So that's kind of, strange that if it was coming from the smart poles, who programmed the server to say, if you can hear this, evacuate now, if you can hear this, evacuate now. And it was in a woman's voice, almost like the Siri voice. I'm sure you've probably heard the tape. It does. If it was Anthony Quinn Warner's voice, it would probably been, a man's voice. It was an automated voice, and it could have been a voice-to-text type of computer program. It could have been coming from the motorhome, but, Buck said it sounds like to him that it was coming right from the top of the smart pole outside, because he woke up. He heard the gunshots, which some are saying that the gunshots that was heard is a series of three and then five and then like three more. And, some people were saying that the gunshots were recorded as well, and it was to get people's attention. But, I've heard that other people said that it sounded like real gunshots, but nobody saw anybody running around with a gun. So that's another, I've heard that maybe there was a white hat, black hat battle that happened. Maybe they figured out there was going to be a bomb and they detonated it. Maybe they, programmed the, knew that they couldn't defuse it in time. So they put that message, out through the smart poles, that the government may have had, something to do with that. There's a lot of conspiracy theories, obviously. And I've got mine, but, I'm still just as curious as a lot of people as to how a blast coming from an RV and a homemade bomb could have done that much damage.
Well, you said you're not an FBI agent, but your family's been in construction down there a long time, 100 years, 100 plus years, is that right?
Yeah. My building I'm working on was actually built by my great-great-grandfather in 1877. And it burnt early 1900s, and my great-grandfather rebuilt it. So, yeah, they built most of what's all downtown, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th Avenue, the Ryman, they had over 600 employees at one time. They built houses all over East Nashville and Edge Hill and 12th Avenue South and, you know, up into the late 50s before they finally, you know, the older brothers and uncles had died out and there just wasn't enough new people in the family to take over the business. And so I'm kind of the last one that's left, even though I don't operate under the construction banner anymore. My uncle did. He passed away a year ago, June. He was the last that was still operating. And, you know, he was a master carpenter. Back in those days, you did everything from the footings to the finish. You know, one company did everything. You know, all your windows were built on site, and you did all the milling and finishing and everything. You had a wood shop, and you made all your moldings and stuff like that. But so it was a lot more involved than say, you know, now you got framers that come in and frame, drywall crews that come in there and trim guys, and you know, all your different subs and your trades. But back in those days, it was kind of a, you know, start digging a hole and, you know, 2 years later, you're finally putting the roof on it. So.
Well, the fact that you've been in construction, you understand that the bombs don't jump buildings, they don't leap buildings.
Well, and that was a strange part to see it, you know, the blast come around the corner of the alley and do the damage that it did to ours. Yeah, it blew. Somebody said that it looked like they were targeting. There's a big cable, a main cable that runs into that building. It goes under the highway, across the Second Avenue underground, goes under the sidewalk, and that was damaged severely. I've got, I think, a picture or two of that. But the fact that it blew the road up on the other side of the road from where the RV was sitting makes no sense. I could see there being a slight crater, you know, some blasted out pavement, that type of thing. One thing you got to realize about Second Avenue, it's asphalt now, but it hadn't been when we did the Wild Horse Saloon. It was brick. The entire street was a brick paver. I know because we did some work down there for Charter and MCI putting in fiber optic cables back years ago, and we had to tear up part of Second Avenue, and then we had to go down to the Metro's brickyard and get some of the pavers to, you know, fix the roads. And then when they opened the Wild Horse Saloon, they ran 80 horses up through there. So it messed them up again. We had to go back and fix them again. But when they paved that, they never took those pavers up. So you got that 4-inch brick, and then you got a concrete base under it, and then 3 inches of asphalt on top of that now. So for, you know, under the RV, you know, you would think to see some damage to the road, but the damage to the road was actually over around the sidewalk, right below that air shaft I was telling you about. The sidewalk's just completely shit canned over there, and part of the road is too. I mean, it looks like the blast happened on the opposite side of the road that the motorhome was sitting on. And the videos that I've seen, when the actual impact takes place, you can still see the motorhome sitting there, not exploded yet. So, and, you know, some powers that be have kind of tried to do their best to wipe those videos off the internet. I think I might have one of them saved. But then I've got the pictures I took the very first day we could get downtown, and you had to show your driver's license, what company you were with. You could only be down there to board up windows. They took me and all my guys' licenses and ran security checks on us before they'd let us in there. And then at lunch, I snuck down, didn't really have to go through a barricade because I was already inside their barricades. But I walked down Second. I was going to go over and check out Hooters and see how much damage was done over there because I had a good chance I can get that contract.
Right.
And I had my phone down low, kind of snapping a couple of pictures. And when they, you know, saw me, but I think I got like 5 pictures of the damage before it was even touched, before there was even any cleanup effort. And then I've got some pictures from about 3 days later that once the streets were cleared. But just from the damage that the pictures that I've got are, you know, pretty telltale that it was something pretty major that blew up down there. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. I just don't see that happened by a bomb that was sitting inside an RV. Like I said, unless it was packed with C4, but, you know, C4 on the black market, from what I've heard from Army Ranger friend of mine, is about $2,500 for 4 ounces. He said that it would have took about 15 pounds of C4 to do that kind of damage.
That's a lot of C4, man.
That's a lot of C4, wow. Yeah. So I don't know how this guy, come up with enough explosives. I think he was a patsy. It's just funny, the Las Vegas sniper, what was his name, Stafford or whatever his name was, but
Paddock.
He was 63. What's that?
Paddock? Stephen Paddock.
Yeah, Paddock. Yeah, Stephen Paddock. He was 63, unmarried, and a former IT tech. The Anthony Quinn Warner was 63, unmarried, and a former IT tech. It's almost like they, I don't know, coincidence or, does this have something to do with the deep state, white hats, the black hats, the FBI? I don't know. I've even heard that it could have been possibly set up by MI6, British Intelligence, and was launched from a van that was parked at Nissan Stadium. And it was dropped in with a drone. Why else? And they also, they blocked their air traffic. They shut down the airspace over Nashville for, I think, about 18 hours before they opened it back up.
Right, yeah.
I think it was late evening on the 26th before they opened the airspace back up. So that makes no sense. And the fact that the FBI was there in 15 minutes after it happened, I mean, those guys, it's Christmas Day. Most of them had the day off. There's a field office in Nashville, but I don't know who would have, how many agents would have been in there. But usually the ATF investigates explosions, not the FBI. And the fact that they were there so fast and had everything shut down and, immediately had the story, that it was a motorhome packed with explosives. They wasted no time at all, getting out in front of the story. And, it was obviously somebody that wasn't trying to hurt anybody, or they would have waited till 8:30 at night, parked that RV down in front of Ernest Tubb Records on Broadway, and could have unleashed hundreds and hundreds of deaths. So with the warning going on, and evacuate if you can hear this, just tells me that there was an intended target, and it was the AT&T building. There are some VREMP servers in there. Basically, they're EMP protected servers, and that somebody may have thought that they could. Maybe this wasn't EMP. Maybe they thought they could damage those servers. I heard that those servers were the servers that were on the third basement section. There's that basement goes, I think, six floors deep. It was dug out in the 1930s. And forget what it was. At one time, it was part of the jail. But I don't know over the years what they did with it. But I know when I was doing some work, when they built Sbarro's out, which is a pizza joint that's actually in the basement of that building, you could go back in that building, and then if you need to kill one of the five-faced towers, there was 3 five-faced towers that went through it then. This is before AT&T moved anything in. If this was in 92 or 93, you had to go down like 3 stories into a 3-story basement, down 3 staircases to get to the fuse boxes where the mains were. And I know that there was a couple of more floors below that. I didn't go down it because it was scary as fuck down there. But
be careful down in those old buildings.
Well, you're doing it with a flashlight because there's very little lighting down the old wooden staircases. But I was also told that there's a room down there called A641, which is where the NSA keeps it. Warrantless wiretapping supercomputers, and it's one of 8 in the United States, but it's one of the hub ones. That maybe somebody was trying to get it, which if they did, they used the wrong type of equipment. They would need a bunker buster to get that deep, but because it's supposedly on the very, very bottom floor, which if I'm not mistaken is either 5 or 6 deep. So, and the floors in that thing are solid reinforced concrete. Like I said, the basement was dug out, and the floors were poured later, the lower levels. But in the parking lot straight across from where we're working is AT&T's guys. Anybody and everybody that's doing anything inside that building goes in and out and access that's visible from if you come out the front door. We're working at 210 Third Avenue. Right beside us is a parking lot, pay parking. Right across the street is a pay parking lot. Where they're set up in that pay parking lot across the street, and there's FBIs and ATF agents over there every day that we've been down there. It was, I think, Friday when they finally opened up 3rd Avenue where you didn't have to go through a checkpoint on 4th and Church to get in there, but they just moved the checkpoint back to 2nd and Church, or to 3rd and Church, so we could get to our place now, and, you know, I could go in and use my parking passes and stuff and get to our building and actually go back to working on what we were doing. But that parking lot across from us has not seen a moment's peace from not having ATF and FBIs, and they've got a lot of tents set up over there. 18-wheel trucks have been dropped off, and then, you know, the trailer's been dropped off. A lot of people going in and out in. I guess it's some type of mobile lab. And then they've got some tents with the sides zipped down on them. You can't see what's going on in there, but they're, you know, probably 12 by 12 tents. There's about 3 of them. They could be, you know, hospitality tents or something. I don't know, but it just seems like there's a lot of government personnel over there. If this was just, you know, motorhome blowing up, the AT&T guys, you know, they had a lot of work to do, and I'm sure they got a lot more work to do. But I don't know why you need that many, you know, personnel, government personnel, law enforcement still over there. But that's what it is. Was today when we left there at 4 o'clock, I saw 2 FBI agents and a couple ATF guys standing around out there talking, and they all got on their, you know, jackets to signify who they are. So it's pretty easy to figure out who's who. I mean, I don't put nothing past anybody anymore when it comes to, you know, the skullduggery that has become our Department of Justice and everything else. I'm just not, nothing would surprise me anymore. I mean, you could tell me that, you know, the CIA set off a nuke somewhere, and it would be, I'd be like, oh, well, you know, don't imagine they, you know, tried to hide that. But so,
well,
I mean,
you have a background in the government. Wasn't your father involved with the government?
Well, yeah, he was a highly classified engineer. He worked on a lot of projects, Skunk Works project. He worked for NASA for years. Worked on pretty much everything that went up into space. He had 4 master's degrees in 4 different types of engineering. Went to MIT, Georgia Tech. He was you know, back when I was growing up in the 60s, they had our phones bugged. You know, this is what my mom told me over the years. And they used to send the guys in the gray cars by the house at night, and they checked our mail out of the mailboxes. And, you know, this is back, you know, during the Cold War. This is 66, 67, 69, 70, through there. But he worked for McDonnell Douglas, Lockheed Martin, worked for Bally, GM. He was a consulting engineer for years. But his main thing from 59 through 87, he was one of NASA's top engineers. And he worked for Boeing briefly and worked for, like I said, he worked on the Skunk Works project. That was his crowning achievement
right,
in his life,
works,
I think.
Right. Yeah.
He always referred to the SR-71 Blackbird as his baby, and he was one of the design engineering, and from concept all the way through to production, he was one of the chief engineers on that deal. I've actually seen my dad on the History Channel several times, where they've shown, you know,
wow,
my footage from the 60s. I'm like, hey, here's dad. It used to be, you know, rewind it and record it, and now, you know, it's been on so many shows. But yeah, he was very integral in the Apollo 13, Apollo 11, basically every Saturn, Gemini, Universal greeting card, all the way back to, you know, Gus Grissom, the first man that, you know, actually orbited the Earth, and Neil Armstrong, and he knew all those cats. I've got pictures of him with all the astronauts and the head of NASA, what's his name, Gene, I can't remember his last name, it's in here on this picture. But, yeah, he's, you know, had level 4 clearance, and he was a very smart man, died way too young. But, you know, he told my mom one time, he said, if the American public knew what our government does and what our government knows, he said, everybody'd be hiding under their bed in a fetal position. So that's coming from a man who had no sense of humor, who probably, you know, the whole time I knew him in my entire life, I probably only heard him speak maybe 5,000 words. And that don't sound like, you know, that sounds like a lot, but you're talking about your dad, who you've known
right
all your life till he died. The man just didn't speak much. And when he did, he was kind of an introvert. He owned several motorcycle shops. He was
had his pilot's license. He flew his own plane, and but he was after him and mom divorced. He just became an introvert. He didn't. If he said something, it's because he wanted you to know it. But I mean, I remember riding as a kid, riding to Florida with him, and you know him saying four words the entire trip. You know, it just became normal. You know, Dad didn't talk. But when he did, you know.
Sometimes guys at that level, they carry around so much heavy stuff that they get lost in their own world.
Well, that's what Mom, you know, said about Dad. He said he had so much in his head that he wasn't allowed to talk about, wasn't allowed to ever speak of.
It's crazy. And you're afraid you might slip up, so you just clam up.
Right. I mean, Mom said there was not. She would, you know, hear him in the bathroom, and she'd go in there, and he'd be in the shower with no water running in there crying. And, you know, she'd ask him what's wrong. He'd be like, nothing, just go away. And, you know, I think he just knew so much about so much stuff that, you know, he told Mom before they divorced and, you know, some years back before he died that, you know, that there were aliens and they had them in, you know, a warehouse in Scottsdale, Arizona. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, if he said something, you'd have to say, well, since he's only spoke five words this year, I'm probably going to believe those five are probably true. So,
yeah, there are a lot of old school guys like that in the 50s and 60s who worked for the agency CIA. Who you ask them about?
Yeah.
I've asked them about personally. What's the story with aliens? And they just look at you like, well, I'm not going to get into that. Not like, oh, well, you're crazy. Not like you're crazy or anything like that. It's like, well, I can't talk about that.
Exactly. And there's, you know, so many other things just besides aliens that, you know, probably should scare people too. There's probably things out there that, you know, we don't want to know and the government doesn't tell us because it would create a panic. But, you know, I've also heard that they're going to be declassifying a lot of alien stuff this summer. So it's a stay tuned type of thing.
But the reason I brought that up, that's interesting insight. The reason I brought that up about your dad is you're not just some guy wielding a torch down there who's worked on a couple different sites and you don't know squat about how things work. You know, I'm trying to lay some groundwork when people listen to this, they know that you know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, I mean, he was definitely one of the good guys, and he didn't, you know, bullshit around. If he said something, you could pretty much take it to heart. Now, how much of that I inherited, I don't know. I guess kind of took out my mom's side of the family, the builders and the you know, tradesmen and stuff. But he was definitely one that probably knew more than he should have known.
Well, I'll keep in touch with you if anything breaks. This is good stuff. I was shaking my. I thought I'd heard everything. I thought I'd heard it all. After talking to him, I was like, "Whoa!" This time I know I'll be strong. For once, I can touch. Thanks for the folks on Patreon.com/TruePundit and Subscribestar.com/TruePundit. Get access to the video podcast we're recording right now. Pain After Dark show coming on Saturday. We released that special interview 2 days ago, I think, last night, two nights ago, to patrons, and they were like, Jesus, this is crazy. These are great people. They're such a great community. They talk back and forth. They give good intel. They give good give and take on their emailing me saying, get that thing out to the public. You would think most would be like, hey, man, I paid for this. This is they said, get that interview out to the public. Jump in. As you get early access to most of our good stuff, we had a really good interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We put that out to our folks first, and then a long time later, we put it out again at their urging. So thank you for your support, and we'll keep trying to bring the heat in 2021 and cut through all the bullshit. Again, take care. God bless. We'll be right back.